And I also look at it in a inspirational kind of way to see what has the most alluring design, which one that speaks to you the most.
I guess that's how I'd pick a watermelon.
But you're not done yet. Then you have to look at the watermelon and ask it, is it okay for me to take you home?
Okay.
Right? I'm not done. Okay. And then when the watermelon says yes, you put it in your basket and go home. And then you cut it with a knife and you eat it. Now I'm done. The end.
And this is Coco for the KBU Youth Collective.
Thanks, Coco.
You're listening to Peace, Love, and Soup.
Well, welcome to Peace, Love, and Soup in the Kitchen. And Tavi, what are we making today?
We are going to be making a watermelon soup for the solar eclipse.
Damn, I wish that it was a solar eclipse. Now it's so hot today, it's over 100.
We could definitely use some shade. But this is going to be a cooling soup, and we have all of the ingredients coming right out of the refrigerator.
That's right.
We were inspired by talking to our guest, and we have some inventive ideas of our own to try out for color, crunch, and overall deliciousness. Together with Alicia yesterday, we decided to include jicama, cucumber, mint, and lime juice with the watermelon. That's all very cooling. And then in addition, for fun,
we're going to have honey and the rind of the watermelon, and then also the seeds. You had a little bit of drama trying to find a seeded watermelon, isn't that correct?
I did, and I'm really glad that I bought one coming home from camping because nobody had seeded watermelons, including Whole Foods. And the produce guy at Whole Foods said, it's supply and demand. Nobody wants to deal with seeds, and so we don't carry them. No, in fact, we were accidentally shipped a case of those, and we had to throw them all away because hardly anybody bought them.
Wow, what a shame. And I feel like seeded watermelons are slightly sweeter.
I know. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, any fruit that has seeds is going to have more flavor.
So I'm thinking of what, grapes?
Yeah. And he said, for example, try and get people to buy seeded grapes. They're just not going to do it. And the same now goes for watermelon. And so hardly anybody carries them.
How interesting. I will say that Tavi picked excellent watermelons. So let's chop up our melon.
And let's use that new trick that we found for cutting melon.
Yes.
So it makes for a really easy fruit salad or for prepping of any kind. We're going to treat it as if it were a pineapple. Envision cutting off both ends of a pineapple.
Top and bottom.
And then slicing down and slicing off the rind.
This is a fabulous trick. I like this. It's actually easy to get the rind off because the watermelon stays on its solid, flat base as you cut around the side, so it's not slipping and falling and sloshing all around. My brother's method is he'll let the watermelon rest on its underbelly and then cut a hole in the top, pop that off, and then he scoops out the innards of the watermelon with like an ice cream scoop and then puts the top back on, puts it in the fridge, and eats it that way.
Kind of like it was a jack-o'-lantern.
Exactly.
Which we now know watermelons are in the same family as pumpkins. Let's get to the seeds.
Removing the seeds now. So I'm using my hands because I feel like it's a easier method to get at the seeds rather than a knife. And it's almost like removing pomegranate seeds. This method is working well.
It's very visceral.
That's done.
I'm readying the food processor. You could use a blender if you didn't have one. You could even make this recipe outside if you just ran an extension cord.
Years ago, I was traveling in Mexico with a friend of mine, and we were on a beach, right? Mm-hmm. So we just actually clipped the little plug into the wall off of the blender and wired the bare wires directly to the battery of the car.
Oh, my gosh. Why on earth?
Well, we wanted to make frozen margaritas. I don't know if this is safe, but we did it. I'm sure now they make battery-operated or solar-powered ones if you can find them.
That's fantastic.
Next, 12 cups of watermelon going into the food processor.
It really is sweet watermelon. I'm kind of snacking on it as we go.
We probably ate 4 cups.
We did account for that, so the recipe is correct.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, first round.
Now let's add the cucumber, the honey, the rind to the food processor. But it's already looking good. Obviously, we'll have to do multiple batches because it doesn't fit.
Try and get this last round really fine.
Oh yeah, that's a little more liquidy than the first batch you did. Again, this is like a texture thing, however chunky or finely do you want your food processed.
Oh, I kind of like it like that.
We're just folding in the diced chunks of watermelon and 8 ounce jicama cubed, and then 4 sprigs of mint chopped and folded in.
And here goes the mint.
Pretty that is. Ugh.
Nice. Got a photo of this too. Great.
So we'll have a finer consistency along with chunks. It's actually looking chunkier than our gazpacho, which I'm actually excited about.
Mm-hmm, me too.
All right, so it's all been incorporated.
And then we're going to fold it all with the lime juice.
The soup is coming together quite nicely.
Do you want to have a little taste?
More lime juice in? Is that okay with you?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's add more.
I like that.
So it's a half a cup of lime juice that we used in total.
I am glad we added the honey, though. Even though watermelon can be very sweet, I think because we added the rind and also the cucumber to tone down that sweetness, you just have to bump it back up. All right, Tavi, let's put it in the fridge.
Just throw it in a bowl, and then we're going to stick it in the refrigerator.
And toast up our seeds while we're waiting for that to get cold. What was your phone alerting you to with that quacking sound?
It was PGE, and it was a flex time alert. And they said, the less energy you can use today, the more you can help out your community. So.
Well, good on us. Well, just in time, we finished with the food processor, and we no longer need any energy except for gas for toasting our seeds.
Right. And in addition, I should mention we live in an old 1910 bungalow, and so there is no air conditioning.
I thought you were just punishing me.
Because it's so hot, we're not going to be toasting these seeds in the oven. We're going to roast them in a cast iron skillet. But for that matter, I think you could even do that on the barbecue, so long as you preheated your cast iron pan. So you could do it all outside if you wanted.
Camping style.
For sure. So we're just going to dump all the seeds in, and then we can throw some salt on top too. 1/4 teaspoon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll toss this through. We'll probably roast them until they start looking a little drier and kind of like a roasted nut would look.
I can smell it.
I know, roasted seeds. Who'd have known you could eat watermelon seeds?
We were able to get maybe a 1/2 cup of seeds out of the thing. You know what? And talking about watermelon seeds, you had such trouble finding them in the stores, like a seeded watermelon. And it reminded me today when I was removing the seeds how much they look like ticks, and then it brought me back to when I was a kid.
Summertime memories of camping, for sure.
Memories of childhood and ticks.
We have a block party that we go to each year, and usually there's a watermelon seed spitting contest. Mm-hmm. One year we went, and there's little slices of watermelon. There's no seeds in them, and then they have these dried black beans next to them. We're like, what's going on? And they were like, well, we couldn't find any seeded watermelons. So you just take a little bite of this seedless watermelon and then put one of these dried black beans in your mouth and spit that.
That seems like cheating to me.
That was the only way around it.
Wow.
Some of them are shooting around the pan. Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Jumping beans.
Ooh, popping like popcorn.
Oh. Maybe that one's a tick.
Looking nice and toasty.
Almost like a coffee bean color.
These are good. We're just going to put them on the side and reserve them to stick on top to taste. What are we going to do for garnish?
We're going to finely sliver the rind of the watermelon. We're going to have tiny little cubes of jicama. We're going to also have cucumbers. Let's see, we've chopped everything. This podcast premieres on the new moon during a solar eclipse. And so we took the Persian cucumbers and sliced them very thin cross section. So we have full moon and half moons.
Yeah, those look good.
And then you garnish.
And serve.
Then you eat.
Okay.
So now Tavi's going to taste.
Wow, it's so crunchy. I especially like the jicama. It's like an apple-like consistency, and the rind has almost a little bit of a celery taste to it, but without all of the strings.
What else are you feeling about the soup?
I like all of the different textures. I love that it was pureed, but then we also have a little bit of chunks, and then the slivers as well. So it's kind of like a potpourri of sizes in your mouth.
What do you think of the watermelon seed garnish?
Well, I like that dry crunch on top, and that little bit of saltiness, which is really like a treat. Kind of like when you're out in the countryside. I remember spending time out there with friends of family, and they would salt their cubes of watermelon. It really kind of pulls out that extra sweet flavor from the watermelon. Love it.
How does it differ from our gazpacho?
Oh my gosh, it's entirely different. Well, first of all, it's sweeter. The honey has like a distinct flavor to it. It's imbibed a little bit of that honey. But in addition to that, the lime juice sticks out. It's a nice complement. So there's something sweet and tart about this all at the same time. Much more refreshing, not hearty in any way. This is a very light soup.
So there we go.
Watermelon soup for the solar eclipse.
Cheers.
Tavia, I just got a text from one of our Peace, Love, and Soup listeners. And it's saying that today of all days is National Watermelon Day. And we didn't plan this at all.
I feel like I knew it was in August, but I had no idea that it was actually today. That's wild.
Incredible.
It is.
Synchronicity.
I know. What on earth? I mean, it's kind of interesting. Okay. Here's hoping wherever you were for the solar eclipse that it was an epic experience.
But before we go, we'd like to leave you with this quote.
I still say shoot for the moon. You might get there. Buzz Aldrin.
And finally, we look ahead to September, National Peace Month.
The world could sure use more of it.
In honor of that, we are going to be emphasizing the peace in Peace, Love, and Soup, talking with Wintry Witt Smith of Peace Village, and making our own loving version of pea soup. Join us then for a great big bowl of
peace, love, and soup.
Down by the bay, where the watermelons grow, back to my home.
You've been listening to Peace, Love, and Soup, audio nourishment for the heart and mind.
With Brian Delaney.
And Tave Fache-Drake.
For more information about this month's episode, along with links, photos, and recipes, please visit us at kboo.fm/peace, love, and soup. As well as Peace, Love, and Soup on Facebook. You can listen to other episodes there, as well as on SoundCloud.
My mother will say, did you ever see a whale with a polka dot tail? Down by the bay, down by the bay. Let me hear you, where the watermelons grow.
Hello, and welcome to our monthly edition of Peace, Love, and Soup Live.
We hope you enjoyed that radio broadcast of an episode we produced in August of 2017, when the country was all abuzz with the rare coast-to-coast solar eclipse.
It was so exciting. Brian and I will be entertaining, and we hope educating you, until the top of the hour with more local culture and conversation. Opening this live segment, the song Cascadian Pride by Portland singer-songwriter and steel guitar player Eric Callio.
Sitting and thinking on the mountainside, feeling the breeze, that Cascadian pride. Seeing the lights from the city glow, on the edge of space with no boundaries to know.
Today in the studio, we are excited to welcome Jim Todd, the Director of Space Science Education at OMSI, which is the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. Thanks for coming in on this lovely day today, Jim.
My pleasure.
Hi, Jim. Where were you for the Great American Solar Eclipse in 2017?
Well, definitely at the Salem Fairgrounds, and we were putting on displays, and I was kind of the MC upon the stage and had the pleasure of introducing the eclipse for all of those 7,000 people at the fairground. So it was a beautiful day, and that 2 minute totality, it was just phenomenal. It was a memory of a lifetime. Nothing will top 2017 for many, many people. I had tears coming down my eyes, and astronaut Don Pettit was with me. He'd seen two eclipses on the space station. He was jumping up all over me.
Honestly, seeing that corona was something I did not expect to be so spectacular. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be like a movie trailer. You know, they pump it up to be incredible, and you're like, nah, it was okay. But it was just amazing. And my whole family and I, we kept exclaiming during the two minutes of totality. Right. We'd be like, oh, can you believe it? And then we'd try and be really quiet and just listen to ourselves breathing and the birds chirping and toads and frogs and crickets.
That sounds like a Disney movie.
It was amazing. It really was.
I was on a rooftop in Portland. It's hard to explain, but the air somehow felt different. And I saw those like snake shadows and I felt, my body felt a little seasick. And I was like, this is really amazing and wonderful, but what was going on?
In the ancient time, they call them ghosts. Right? You do see what looked like a lot of waves moving across the ground. But it is because of the eclipse.
Okay.
You feel that sensation.
And that could make one dizzy or seasick, like, yeah, just looking at it.
The air did feel different. You had some color to it. Well, that's because we're in the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So and the temperature also dropped. And we got the human reaction to it, but animals respond as well.
Right.
But we were so lucky. The weather was just gorgeous everywhere. And they were able to see some few bright objects up in the sky. But there's a lot of different experience, spiritually, romantically, scientifically, that came out of the eclipse. You know what's nice about this, too, that after the eclipse, now we have a million eclipse chasers.
Yeah.
They were so fascinated with it. They want to know when the next one's going to be, where can they go, and so on, which is the beauty of it.
And when is the next one?
Well, the next one's going to be 2023, and that's when we're going to have an annular eclipse, where the disk of the moon is going to be smaller than the sun.
Okay.
So it creates what we call the ring of fire. And that's going to be in October. It's going to be in Southern Oregon, right over Crater Lake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and when you think about it, October, weather, fall foliage, I'm waiting for somebody to get a good picture of the reflection on the water of Crater Lake of that ring of fire. That will be a priceless picture.
That really will.
So Portland will get a partial. It's not the totality, but it's still fascinating. And then after that, with 2024, with the total eclipse going down the east coast of the United States, here in Portland, we'll have 60%. People are like, should I use my solar viewing glasses I have in 2017?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Make sure there's no scratches or holes in it.
So you're a chaser.
Yep.
You're going to go to all of these.
Well, I'm going to do the best I can.
I guess maybe I shouldn't say that. People might start being Jim Todd chasers and following him to
Well, yeah, we can do that too.
That sounds like everyone should mark their calendars.
Yes.
And that's, we did our research, April 8th, 2024. If you want to travel to, say, Texas or points northeast from there for the next full eclipse in our nation. But then if we want to have one here in Oregon, you can go down to Crater Lake for that ring of fire in October of 2023.
Mm-hmm. I have a fun fact to add here, too. The totality from the 2024 solar eclipse will coincidentally pass through the town of Wapakoneta, Ohio, home of Neil Armstrong, the first person to set foot on the moon. Jim, so last month was the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. How did you commemorate that day?
Well, we did a day-long event at the museum with various groups. We had presentation in the planetarium. Empirical Theater was showing the Apollo 11 documentary. We had hands-on activity throughout the museum. So much fun, and gave an opportunity to give the new generation of kids to get inspired by space science and astronomy. When I was 8 years old, I watched Neil Armstrong come down the 9 steps and finally step on the moon. That was the moment that I'll never forget, and it changed my life.
Well, now, I know this story, but I'd love if you just tell us about that experience.
I was 8 years old, living in Kearney, Nebraska, and I was always interested in science, but my parents encouraged me to watch the event, and it was like the whole world stopped to watch this. JFK set the goal in 1961, and it was probably the best presidential speech ever, to send man to the moon and return safely by the end of the decade. That was the goal. And so we did all the testing, all the planning, got to the moon, and came back safely. Now, personally, it affected me because of my hearing loss. And it gave me the confidence to set a goal. It's like what JFK was pointing out. And use that as an approach to everyday life. Nobody can't say, I can't do it. Yeah, I'm going to do it.
You are doing it.
And people would say, well, when you work in a planetarium, you can't read lips, you can't hear anybody in there. Well, let's call it, I improvise. I know how to work with it.
Yeah. Okay?
Not because it's easy, but because it's hard. But that doesn't stop me at all. You have to learn to fail, but you learn from that and your success. But I'm blessed with the talent to be able to share that as well with confidence. It's my heart.
Yeah.
And my passion that drives me through. But watching the Apollo 11 said, why not?
Exactly. Right. The sky's the limits.
Well, you know, it's just that you find your niche. You find opportunity.
Yeah.
And you take the risk. And you learn how to take the risk. And so all three of us, we really have been blessed and that things happened as they happened, and you share that excitement. And obviously you guys, you found your niche and say, well, let's try it, let's just risk take. And so that's what inspires me. And you work at the team. And then from there, human exploration will continue to grow and expand.
Yeah.
And so the space program can bring countries together. So I was so inspired by it that I self-taught myself space science. My uncle worked for NASA, and he saw every single Apollo launch. Mm-hmm. He was involved with the shuttle program. Mm-hmm. So that really just put me in kind of in a mode going, I really want to do this. And I knew I couldn't be an astronaut, but this is my way of getting close to NASA. Mm-hmm. And I've met three moonwalkers myself, professionally and personally.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie Duke, Bud Aldrin, they both came to OMSI. Okay. And then Thomas Stafford didn't exactly walk on the moon, but he was the one that really paved the way how to go to the moon and back. Mm-hmm. He was the kindest gentleman I've ever met in my life. So I can just go on and on with astronauts to come and they share their knowledge, and it's mesmerizing.
I've met women astronauts at OMSI as well, and having two daughters that are very science-minded, being able to bring them down and have them in the same room with someone who has been up in space and come back down and to be able to tell you about it, it's very exciting and inspiring. Mm-hmm. Side story, being not super tall, I always thought it'd be great to go up in space because I heard you grow a number of inches.
Mm-hmm.
My desire to do that was squashed when I was at one of the talks because I heard that then you shrink back down within about an hour and it's painful.
Yeah, that's why there's so much study on the space station right now. What the microgravity, how it affects the human body, all the way down to DNA, bone structure, muscle structure. If we're going to go to Mars,
yep,
we have to be prepared to see what effect it will have on the human body and be able to even walk when you get there. Because we have to learn more first about ourselves before we leave this planet.
This is fascinating. I did not know this information. Did you, Brian?
No, I didn't. And the dark side of the moon, other than being a Pink Floyd album.
It's a very popular laser show for us, by the way.
Really? Yeah, I bet it is.
Well, that's a good segue. So, Jim, Todd, you have been working at OMSI for over 35 years now. Tell us what your job entails.
My main role is to operate the planetarium. We find product that we use to show the public current events going on in the nighttime sky as well as space science. We do a whole variety of things. We do live shows, film, and so on. Part of my primary role is to educate the public, be a resource,
mm-hmm,
interpret the information that's out there, and bring it down to a layman's level so that people come in for the first time, they walk away with some good understanding what they learn. The cool thing is that in my 35 years, technology have changed and changed and changed again. So we have new ways of presenting in the planetarium with new projectors, software, and every year it gets better and better and better. We have, the creativity is wild.
Oh.
But the idea behind the planetarium to go in there and use imagination. Imagination needs the knowledge. Knowledge needs to imagination. So we can go anywhere. I have to coordinate the OMSI Star Parties, which we have been doing for over 25 years. And there we work with the real skies, and we work with the Rosetta astronomers who volunteer their telescope and their knowledge and come out. We look at the nighttime sky so that people can come and learn about an event that's happening, the lunar eclipse, the solar eclipse, the meteor shower.
The Star Party, it's happening next week, August 12th.
Yeah, August 12th is always the largest star party of the year for OMSI. And this is going to be the peak of the Perseus meteor shower. The Earth making a rendezvous, which is debris left behind by a comet. That's what creates what's called a meteor shower. Every year, August 12th, it's a peak. And so we can get upwards 60 to 80 meteors per hour. The debris itself is ice particles, no larger than a grain of sand. They've been going around the sun for millions of years, really. And it's nighttime, we see the debris entering the Earth's atmosphere from being pulled down, traveling several thousand miles per hour. So we will be at Rooster Rock State Park and Stubbs George State Park. It's free after $5 parking for the Oregon State Parks. I'm there as an interpreter, and then we'll have the volunteers from the Rosetta astronomers with the telescope. Okay. While we're watching the meteor shower, we can look at Jupiter, we can look at Saturn, we can look at the moon. We generally start at sunset, and some people stay there until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And time flies when you're out there having so much fun. in the past few years, we have actually had 2,000 to 3,000 people coming out for the event. The best part is that we're watching, and when the media appears, it feels like a rock concert. It's really a wonderful, spectacular show.
Anything else out there in the summer sky that we should be looking for?
Absolutely. This summer, there's a lot to see. We'll have the pre-chief meteor shower coming up. And so each night gets more and more and more until we reach a peak on August 12th. And then it starts to diminish because that's how big the debris field is. Okay? And Saturn and Jupiter are going to be the prominent planet for the summer of 2019.
Okay.
Jupiter, you can see bright, really bright right now. And then we have Saturn, you see the ring. It's something you'll never forget. It's always a crowd pleaser.
So we've got star parties. You could use extra special telescopes in conjunction with the Rose City astronomers.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty, too. If people are interested in getting a telescope, there's no better place to come out to the star party and see the variety of reflectors and refractors and binoculars and all just simple devices.
So you have an opportunity to come out and see a sight different than you would see on your own with your naked eye, to get advice from experts and hobbyists.
And or go to the planetarium and see a digital version of the night sky.
Right.
Also true.
Yeah.
Share with our listeners the different variety of shows that they can attend here in Portland at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry Kendall Planetarium.
And we have a show, as you're pointing out, called Starry Night Live. It's a live presentation. Okay. We talk about the current night sky. Cool. And we talk about what's coming up during this month. We have, for the little guys, One World, One Sky. And it's a Sesame Street. It's the introduction to the sky and into the planetarium. Family with children who come to the museum, they love this show. Then follow that, a little bit older, we have Dark Universe, about dark energy, dark matter, narrated by Neil deGrasse Tyson. And then from there, we got laser shows, Dark Side of the Moon. We always have to have that.
You do.
The lasers have been around for eons. We change our shows monthly, by the way. So people have different things they can choose from. We also want to point out that we've been showing a unique show called Mesmerica. It's a meditation show. And it's very different. It's abstract. It's run by James Hood. And it's a visualization up on the dome, but it's also audio for 1 hour. We've been selling out one after another. And that's going to be playing until the end of August. Still some tickets available, but it's a very popular program. That's to show the versatility of our planetarium. We just installed a brand new system in the planetarium about a year and a half ago. And it provided with bright, sharp images, and we have 5.1 audio to really enhance the experience. And then in the evening, we have rock shows. We just kicked off at the Kendall Concerts. And the band coming in, we put the visualization on the dome. Mm-hmm. And we try to match the music with the scenes. They've been working out very well. The bands are really starting to take hold of it.
They're not even a year old. I'm really excited because Merle Haggard, my all-female Merle Haggard tribute, is going to be playing there in March of 2020. Jim gave us a wonderful tour.
Incredible.
And showed us all the different options for mood or scenery. And we also have the opportunity to design our own visuals to bring in. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Avi, you're going to be a star.
I couldn't resist. So let's see. OMSI has broadened their STEM education, which is science, technology, engineering, math, to include the arts and the connection that art plays in the sciences. So we now have STEAM. Science, technology, engineering, art, and math.
STEAM. That makes me think of soup.
Yes.
And as you know, our Peace, Love, and Soup is a variety show bringing people together around the table. And we use soup as a metaphor, also literally. So we have to ask you, Jim.
What is your favorite soup?
Tomato soup is always my go-to soup. I love having cheese sandwich with hot tomato soup.
You like it chunky? Do you like it creamy? Is it like a milk base? Or some people make it with orange juice?
I like it chunky. Chunky. And I like to throw things in it, like crackers. That's my favorite kind of soup. I put it in a cup.
A mug of soup.
Yep.
With some crackers in it.
Creamy a little bit.
Sounds great.
I'm just envisioning now those little like oyster crackers, which kind of look like little moons or suns, something constellation-y. And OMSI has the Theory Cafe. They serve local, sustainable, nutritious food there. And I'm wondering, maybe we get Theory to make a Jim Todd soup.
Yeah.
Like a tomato soup with constellations in it.
It calls the soup of the universe.
Maybe that's what Theory is going to call that, Jim Todd soup of the universe. Soup. It's always bringing people together. So let's see. People can find out more about all of the wonderful things we've been talking about, from the star parties to the Kendall Planetarium, by going to omsi.edu. That's omsi.edu.
Thank you, Jim, for your wisdom and enthusiasm. And do you have something to add?
I do. This has just been a real treat to have you in here today. I appreciate you taking time out of your work day to come down here. Thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yes, peace and love to you and all of our groupies out there, or in our case, we call them the Soupies. You've been listening to Peace, Love, and Soup Live with Brian Delaney and Tave Fashley Drake.
Audio nourishment for the heart and mind.
To find out more about us and listen to past episodes, go to kboo.fm/peace, love, and soup. You can also find us on Facebook and SoundCloud at Peace, Love, and Soup.
We're going to go out to the song Sunset Chaser by Eric Calio. His new album is entitled Life Force, and it will be out September 2nd on Labor Day. Find out more about him and his music at ericcalio.com. That's ericcalio.com.
Special thanks to engineer Ray Bodwell and Stage and Studio and Art Focus for sharing their time slots with us. They will be back next week.
All right. As always, peace, love, and, of course, soup.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial 2019 on Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza in Portland. This year, the annual Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial event is focused on the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons and will explore the disproportionate impacts that nuclear weapons have on women, children, indigenous communities, and communities of color. Again, that's Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial 2019, the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, on Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m.